One, two, three.
Hey, there we go. Perfect timing.
So it'll be off then.
Always, because they don't have to just like match up the waveforms and get everybody lined up. Usually you're the one that's off. I'm always right because, you know, it's my show. I'm right. So.
Oh, okay. I see how it is.
It's how we roll.
Dang Apple elitist.
That's right. Hey, and you know what? We're going to talk about Apple because you may not call me an elitist after today because I just want to have
it. Oh, no. I just like to poke at you. I know you're not.
Well, my whole thing is it's... we're really going to get into it a little bit later.
Okay, and so we're gonna I have some pretty good comments on.
Yeah, for our listeners out there, today's show may be a little bit different. I want to rant about Apple today, and that's really what I want to focus on after we get through the follow-up and some other stuff that we want to talk about. But I just really want to talk about Apple and this HomePod. So, but before we do that, I want to do some follow-up from last week. There was a tool that I use that I forgot to mention, and I use it to manage my Linux servers, and it's called Landscape. I think I've mentioned it before. It's kind of like this online management thing, and you get it for free if you just have like 10 VMs, or you can get like 60 containers. But I think you can only count a VM as a container if you're using like KMS. Is that the way? Is that
KVM?
KVM, yeah. And so I get like free 10 free VMs since I use virtual VMware, and so I use that to kind of be able to be a central point of management to update all of my Linux servers. Now, the only problem I have with it is whenever I click apply these updates and they all fail because the root drive, I think, or the boot drive, something, wherever it downloads everything first, is filled up because it downloads like 6 versions of the kernel. And yeah, so then you have to log into each one manually and do the sudo apt auto remove. And so it'll get rid of all the other stuff, fix the grub menu, and then you can run all your updates. So that's the only downside I have with it.
Yeah, you should be able to do some pre and post commands, though, in Landscape for that. Yeah, I don't know. Does that feature come with a free edition?
I don't know. I've been trying to dig around to see if there's like some way that I can run some kind of command on it. I think you have to do it all through cron, which is fine. I could set up a cron to do sudo apt auto remove like once a week or something. But it's just it doesn't happen too often. So I don't really it doesn't when it happens, it's like just roll my eyes and kind of grunt and just do it, and then I kind of forget about it for another month or two until it happens again.
Yeah, it's always bothered me that it keeps every kernel version that it's ever downloaded until you tell it to go away.
Yeah, it's just, there should be something, and I think there is something. If you were to turn on, like, the auto updates, like, within Ubuntu itself, I think there is a way that you could set it to not keep everything, but, you know, nobody's really brave enough to turn that on in Linux.
Yeah,
so.
I'm not going to do that. In fact, that's the default not to, so no.
Yeah, so.
If Canonical didn't even trust it.
We're not doing that. But speaking of Linux, I actually installed one of your tools that you talked about last week. I installed the NetXMS as a network performance monitoring thing. And like you've told me, it is as complicated as you want it to be and is as simple as you want it to be. And the install was a bit like, the documentation really wasn't that great when it came to installing it. I mean, at all. I mean, what wasn't that great?
Well, they don't really document a whole lot the install process, but in the command prompts when you're executing stuff for it, it'll throw a message out for the next step.
Yeah.
And if you're not paying attention to that and you're using the document, you miss important steps.
Yeah, that's probably what happened to me. But I got it working. I did the GUI interface. I set up a Tomcat server for the first time, and Tomcat is like so easy, but too bad it's run by Java, so it gets a fail in my book for that reason. But I have to run it for this, so I'll let it have a pass for this. I got the Windows native client to work, but the Mac version just gave me a big thumbs down and wouldn't work. And it probably had something to do with the fact that Apple doesn't like Java anymore at all. And so that I had to install like an old version of Java to begin with, and so it probably just didn't like it.
Oh, yuck. But, I mean, there is a one huge perk, though. I mean, being it is Java, Tomcat makes the web app look identical to the native app.
Yes, and it... installing a web app in Tomcat is easy. You just upload and hit OK, and it's done. And it was great.
I know. It's literally brain dead. I mean, and the fact that we avoid Java like it's the plague has never really helped us to learn that it's so easy.
Yeah, and it's like, I mean, I've set up a few Apache servers, and I was like, man, you got to copy this, you got to copy this config file to make this config file, and you have to A2, Insight, Dissite, all this other stuff. Tomcat, you just run a couple commands, create a user group, throw a user in there, and run, and it works.
Bam, you got a GUI.
And then you could do all of your like server backend management from a GUI as opposed to just doing it all through the command line. And so I kind of liked it. It was fun. But the XMS, I think it's going to solve my problem that I wanted. I basically wanted something that reached out to see if my network gear was online and if it was offline to send me an email. And boy, does that work.
Because it's quick on the draw, isn't it?
Because apparently today they were messing with the power over at the elementary school that we're not really using right now. And all of a sudden I'm getting 60 notifications that switches and access points are going down. And so I'm like, well, I guess that works.
Up, down, up, down, up, down.
But yeah.
Did you set up the up messages too or just the down?
Well, I got the ups too. So okay. After I set up and finding things where things at is a little bit complicated, but I think I know how to mosey my way around it now that I can probably set up whatever it is I want to set up. But right. Like you said, I mean, it can be as simple as you want. And this is essentially all I wanted. I just wanted something to be able to tell me if a network device loses connectivity. Now, this thing can go into so much more depth as it can tell me if an interface disconnects. And, well, I don't want that because a computer will reboot and throw an interface down, and I don't want to get emails with that all day.
But, yeah, I did make the mistake of leaving the default config for like the first month that I initially put it in, and good Lord, I've never had so many unread messages in my inbox.
Well, it's a good thing Gmail took the storage limit away then, because you probably would have filled it up.
Oh, no, especially when you're like, we've got a construction project going on.
And they're pulling power every time you turn around, so yeah.
You're like, come on, guys, stop it. You're making my email useless.
But yeah, it's like I had to figure out how to get mine where it wasn't finding everything on the network and just what I wanted it to. And so once I figured out that you actually have to click a radio button box thing to actually turn the filters on after you make the filters, that made everything all great, and it found all my network gear. I really wasn't wanting the access points, but I guess it's kind of handy that if an access point reboots for some reason or loses connectivity, I guess that's good to know. And it also helped me find a misconfigured port on a switch over at the junior high today, because I got a notification that something went down, and I looked at the name of the node, and it was a computer name, and I'm thinking, and it was a student computer that they used for accelerated reader testing. And so I was like, why in the world would this thing be connected to the management network? And so that's when I went and tracked it down using the MAC address table and the include command, and tracked down what port it was in, and found out that the port was configured for the management VLAN as opposed to the access VLAN. And so I was able to fix that problem and delete that computer out of the net XMS so I don't have to see it anymore, and everything's great. So it's actually solved a problem that I didn't even know I had, because a student being on that network, I wasn't so much worried about it being dangerous. I'm more worried about it for filtering levels, because I sort of exclude my management network from the filter so that the filter doesn't interfere with any of the network devices getting anything that they may need. So it was great that I found that device on the wrong network, and so it gets two thumbs up today. And then a half a thumb down for 60 emails, but it wasn't its fault.
Well, I bet that was the most popular machine in that campus to be used, because I'm sure the students had already figured that out.
Well, I don't really know, and I don't really care now, but it was kind of funny, because I got on the switch and I shut the port down. The first thing I did was I shut the port down so that the NIC card on the computer would disconnect. And then I made my changes to it, and I brought it back up, and so that I knew that it would pull an IP address from the right VLAN at this point. So
that's cool. Another feature you should play with before long, it has a MAC walking feature, so you can actually see what MAC addresses are plugged into which ports right there in the interface. And if you do SNMP write communities, you can make changes to the VLANs directly from it.
Oh, that might be kind of fun.
I mean, it can actually be a really vendor-agnostic management system.
Yeah, I kind of like that. That might be handy to be able to find a MAC address right there without having to go into the switch. Because you start at the top level, and then you find out which uplink connection it's on, and then you go to that switch, and you find out that it's on another uplink connection.
Well, I got you another command, since you're a Cisco network, that you'll love. MAC traceroute.
MAC traceroute. Oh, that'll...
So you can go from your... You can pick your root switch if you want. But just like a traceroute works for a ping, it does it for MAC addresses. So you can do a MAC traceroute, and you put your source MAC as the switch that you're on, and then you put the destination MAC for the one you're looking for, and it'll actually go out through all your switches and find that MAC address and tell you which switch and which port.
Right from the root. That's it. that's our show, because
that is something that I've needed for 10 years.
Well, I'm sorry I hadn't mentioned that earlier. I used to use the mess out of that command when I was at Lamar, because we did port security. So.
That's one of them things that's like, how did I know that? That command and the one that where you could default an interface and remove all the config from it.
Yeah, and the default command.
When I learned that command, I was like, where have you been all my life? I mean, because it's like, I can't tell you how many times I've copied this config, put nose there, in front of it, pasted it back
you have,
in.
Since you have some pretty nice Cisco gear, you actually, even in your switches, can test cables from your switch.
Well, I'll be. Look at me.
You got some really cool stuff. Yeah, I'm gonna have to. We're gonna have to come play one day.
I'm learning all sorts of stuff today, and now I'm about to bring it down because we're talking about Google Chrome.
Oh, I thought you were going to talk about Apple being bringing it down.
Well, I'm gonna bring it down even farther when we get to that point.
Oh my gosh! And then you know what? In my separate show notes, because you know me, never being ambitious to document anything, thought I'd document something today, and then created a whole separate show note from the one that you did. Well, I added a line in there. I got to bash Samsung.
Well, that's okay. We'll just get everybody today.
I'm about to say it's pitchforks and clubs today.
And that's kind of what this show is going to be. It's just going to be like disappointment in quality testing, I guess. But the first thing I really wanted to mention was that Chrome is, I think tomorrow, turning on ad blocking, which kind of is weird to me in a way, because I mean Google is an ad company. And so their browser turning on ad blocking is kind of strange to me. I know that it's supposed to block like bad ads and like malware and things
annoying
that are like
ads.
Not standard ads, things that are weird.
You know those insane pop under ads that start playing sound?
Yeah, those are the worst. But those are the kind of ads that it's supposed to start blocking. But I don't really think it's going to affect me too much, but I mean, I run ad blockers, and I think we've probably talked about this before. I run an ad blocker, and there's times it's like I will go to a website, and things won't work on it. Just for instance, it's like when I try to log into my Spectrum account, I have to turn off my ad blocker or whitelist that website because there's some things that I can't do on that website to check out my account information because the ad blocker is blocking it. And so I just don't want with ad blocking being turned on by default in Chrome now, I don't want like Think Through Math or iStation or something like that, or even our testing stuff. Something happens where it's being blocked. So I hope either one, it really only does bad ads and doesn't break things like normal ad blockers do, which block trackers and some scripts and stuff like that, or they give us the ability, they release another version of the group policy stuff that you just installed that allows us to whitelist certain things. And so I really hope it's one of those two solutions.
I can honestly see Google being very conservative with this and not blocking a lot because, man, they're walking a fine line of monopolistic practices, being an ad agency themselves and being such a huge, I mean, they have the dominant browser now. They're the dominant search engine. I mean, they are the internet to some people, and I don't think they're brave enough to block competitors.
I mean, that's what I do. I mean, I open Chrome. I don't type in a web address. I just type in the web address, what I'm looking for, and then I just go from the search links. I mean, like you said, I mean, it's the internet. But my whole thing, too, is, like you said, I mean, they're an ad company, and blocking ads, being an ad company, wasn't there a big stink a while back about AdBlock Plus?
There was, because they also became an ad network, and they would block other people's ads and replace theirs with the AdBlock Plus approved ads.
Yeah, or people were paying them to whitelist their ads.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, that was a big stink. And so, I mean, Google's ultimate motto that apparently they wrote down on a napkin was don't be evil. But
do we really believe that?
Yeah, I mean, when we are Google's product, I mean, essentially what it is, we are the product. Because of the ad, they use our data and stuff to sell ads and do the ad tracking and stuff. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't really know. I don't know if this is really something that, I mean, I think it's great because I think ad blockers are great because the internet needs to be cleaned up of all this crap that nobody really needs to be seeing. It's like these people, they do this stuff to get these extra clicks and this is all this other stuff. I remember when Google AdSense first came out or whatever, I kind of signed up for an account and then like I had like an iframe in like the bottom of my webpage or whatever that kind of like, it was like a 1x1 pixel and it would kind of load the whatever the ads were so you couldn't see them, but it was still loading so I would still get the like the click or whatever. But I think they've kind of fixed that.
I used to have an AdSense account and whatnot, and my account got banned because, you know me, I like to script things.
Yeah.
And apparently I was a little too aggressive in my script where it would go out, it would go to Tor, make a new connection, and go to its page. Well, one time it failed to keep connecting to Tor, so it just came from one address and started clicking ads all from me.
That's always good fun. But, and so it's like people take advantage of this. And so, and like not only like people trying to make money from the ad, well, yeah, people trying to make money from the ads, they do like malicious things, and a lot of times that's how, like, if you punch that monkey, a lot of times you're going to download some malware on your computer. And so that's, I think that's Google's idea of blocking all this stuff, is to kind of stop things like that from happening, and which I think is fine. But I mean, like you said, it's a fine line. At which point does it become monopolistic as far as blocking certain types of ads? It's like, are we going to start blocking, well, I don't know, Bing ads or something like that?
Yeah.
Just because they're a competitor to Google?
One thing I want to see is if they are going to be more aggressive than I think they are, they need to make it easy to whitelist sites, because we all go to those sites and it's like, hey, we see you're using an ad block. Please disable that to view this site.
Oh, you know how I fix that? I just close the tab. I just don't go to those websites.
I generally don't go to them either, but every now and then I just kind of have to.
So I can't read anything from like Forbes, Business Insider. The list just keeps growing. The Atlantic, I think, is one. It's like it's like somebody links a news article on Twitter and you click it and it's like, hey, you got an ad. Oh, well, I guess I'm not reading this article.
It wasn't that important.
But that is one reason why all the main blogs and stuff that I like to read and news sites that I follow, I subscribe to them with Feedly and they just read them in my reader app. And so that's... a lot of times they'll strip a lot of that stuff out, where I don't see all those. I'll see an ad here and there, but it's just mainly just a picture. But what really gets crazy when they try to start loading fonts in the application
in the RSS feed, it's like,
yeah, and so it starts crashing on me. And so I use RSS to try to kind of filter out that. And Safari on Mac, they have like reader mode, which is supposed to kind of do that on its own. I don't really use that though, because mainly I just consume all of my news consumption stuff inside a reader, which connects back to Feedly, which I guess replaced Google Reader, which I don't know why Google kept Feedburner but got rid of Google Reader. I mean, we're gonna keep an RSS service, but we're gonna get rid of an RSS aggregator.
Maybe Reader really wasn't that popular.
It doesn't matter. There was no maintenance. Just run it. It didn't require anything. It just worked.
That's funny. Well, I mean, wow, that thought's gone. Oh, yeah.
It happens.
You were talking about it loading fonts in there. I guess it could be like loading Indian characters.
Oh, yes. And you know what those ad blockers aren't going to get rid of? The white rings on your wooden furniture from your HomePod.
You cannot block the white ring.
You're not going to block the white rings. And there was somebody that put on Twitter, it said it had like the logo from the Rings movie, and says, why am I not seeing this on every news article that is reporting this?
That's awesome.
I just laughed so hard when I saw that. I was like, that is perfect. I mean, people are missing a great opportunity. It's like, you're getting a white ring. You might as well use the logo from the Rings movie with that creepy girl that crawls out of the TV.
Oh, man.
But, okay. But since you went there and I followed up with my own joke, let's talk about this. What is wrong with quality testing with these companies? I mean... What is wrong with we can just kind of back that up. What is wrong with Apple recently? And so there's been this new podcast. Well, I mean, it was an old podcast, happened about 3 years ago. I had no idea about it, but it kind of came back. It's called The Menu Bar, and the guys that are doing it, they're right the past few episodes, and they had this one guest on that was an actual former engineer at Apple. And so far, in that episode 2, they were very critical about Apple, but they were critical in a way that it was rational and it made sense, and it wasn't like negative or bashing. It was in a way that, like, Apple is this company that we, I mean, when you we joke about Apple elitist and all this other stuff, but I mean, but when it comes to, like, if you lay out all the major tech companies out there, if there's one company that appears to care more about your privacy, that appears to care more about its users, and it appears to care more about its products, I think it would be Apple. I mean,
and I will totally agree with that. I mean, you know how I think I got you into Apple, believe it or not.
You did.
Being the Apple, almost anti-Apple now, but
it's like we switched sides.
You're right, and you know mine stems from Steve. I mean, I had a lot of respect for that man.
I mean, he was a jerk, but I mean,
oh, he was a complete jerk. But you know what? He was a good businessman. He made good decisions. Well, after he left Apple the first time, he made good decisions, but. I don't think the company has the same kind of, and I think it's can be classified as draconian leadership. I just don't think they have that anymore.
And it's like, I just don't know what happened. And I'm going to link to that episode of the Menu Bar because this guy that was in it, Bob Burrows, I think is his name, this former Apple engineer. I mean, he kind of gave like this inside look about what his experience was working at Apple. And he worked on some really big projects. I think he worked on the first iPhone and some other things. And he just kind of talked about like Tim Cook's leadership style and all this other stuff. And I think, I mean, it's kind of no secret that he's made it on Twitter. That he does not think that Tim Cook should be running Apple.
And I don't either.
Which, I mean, and this is the thing about Tim Cook. Tim Cook was great. Steve Jobs brought him in because Tim Cook was an operations guy. He wasn't really a products guy. He was an operations guy. But one of my biggest complaints about Apple now is the operations. And, I mean, you still cannot go to an Apple store and pick up a pair of AirPods off the shelf and bring them home. I mean, this product is like over a year and a half old now.
You'd think it was a GPU.
Why is the demand, why is the supply not meeting the demand?
There's got to be some manufacturing issues. That's the only thing that can explain it.
I mean, why was it all these rumors? I mean, and they're just, I mean, nothing can be delayed until it's announced, right? I mean, that's the problem. It's like, hey, the iPhone 10 is delayed. Well, it's not really delayed because they haven't announced it yet. But you see rumors about that all the time. The iPhone is delayed. The iPhone is delayed. This is delayed. This is delayed. I mean, the HomePod was, I mean, I guess it was kind of delayed in a way because it was delayed because they said it was coming at the end of 2017 and here we are in 2018 and the HomePod finally comes out. And not only that, it was shipped without features that they announced that weren't complete. I mean, the iOS 11 was shipped with features that were announced that aren't complete. I mean, this is my biggest thing. It's just I don't understand what is going on with Apple. I mean, for a company that we and the reason why people are so critical about Apple, supposedly Apple fanboys or whatever, they're so critical about Apple now, it's because me not so much, I guess, but I mean, people are passionate about this company because they want to see Apple succeed. They love Apple products. It's like their whole life centers around it. I mean, it may sound like that way for me, but I mean, I just have questions. It's like, I mean, and just kind of where it hits home to me is. Why can I go to Best Buy and pick up 5 iPads on the shelf today, but I place an order with my education account and I'm waiting 2.5 weeks before they come in?
Yeah.
I don't get it.
You know, I think a lot of the criticism comes from, Apple used to be better at it. I mean, I was a convert for Apple when they transitioned from PowerPC to Intel because it went so well. I mean, OS 10.4 was phenomenal. It won me over to the Apple platform. I even had an iPhone at one point, viewers, if you believe that. I mean, I was an Apple guy. I had a Mac Mini, and it started with a Hackintosh, I'll be honest. And then I had a Mac Mini, and then I had a 27-inch aluminum iMac. I bought it the day it was released. And then I got a MacBook Pro when I got ready to sell that. I mean, I was an Apple guy, and I loved it. The software was wonderful. It was stable. It had amazing features that nobody else did, and the quality was there, and that was what kept me there. I mean, it was one of those things, and even back before OS 10 and the dreaded OS 7s and 9s, even those, you would install it, and it would work.
Even if you didn't update it. That was Apple's slogan, right? It just works.
Yeah, I mean, it just worked. It really did. I mean, you could install it and not ever update it, and it would continue working.
And now it's like, it works?
I mean, you
what do you mean it worked? It worked the first time before you got the day one patch?
It works. It's the same slogan, but you just kind of say it different now. But it's like, so this is what I think kind of happened. It's like, and Steve Jobs passed away, and Steve Jobs was a product guy. He was a visionary.
Yes.
But Steve Jobs was also the guy that everybody looked up to. And so Steve kind of had like these two lieutenants. He had Tim Cook and he had Johnny Ive. And so what I think's happened is, I'm not so sure Tim Cook has the ability to tell Johnny Ive no.
And, you know, and honestly, I don't think either of them need to be the leader.
I mean,
Johnny, I like Phil Schiller.
I mean, yeah, Johnny Ive, yes, Phil is great. But Johnny Ive is great when it comes to designing things.
Yes.
But with him being basically in charge of everything now, I mean, everything hardware, everything software, I think goes under Johnny Ive. And so I think he's like designing things a certain way, and he's pushing his engineers and his hardware engineers to build these products according to his design.
Yeah.
And he doesn't have anybody like Steve to be like, no, that's not going to work.
He definitely goes form over function.
It's like, you know, maybe in a couple years when the tech is there, but not right now, because it's going to cause delays, blah, 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 blah. And so we're getting products that are half-baked. And so I was talking to somebody on a Slack group, and I was making a list of everything that basically that kind of came to mind that Apple's kind of like messed up on this year. I mean, it's like you got the HomePod white screen, you have the root password bug, you have the AirPods supply and demand problem, and it was like, and I told him, I was like, you know, I think there was this one major iOS 11 bug, and I can't remember what it was. And he responded, yeah, it was iOS 11.
It was the bug.
I mean, and I can't believe, I mean, it's so buggy. I mean, supposedly iOS 11.2.3, I think, at the time, was supposed to fix the bug that your iMessages would get out of order when you were having a conversation with somebody. I didn't get the bug until I got the fix for the bug. And so I'm dealing with it. And so it's like things get out of order. I have to reboot my devices, and then they'll kind of go back in order, and then they start getting out of order again.
You know, that reminds me of, remember the root problem? They patched it, and they fixed it. But then another update came out that reintroduced it.
Yeah, and when
they had to go back it again.
Like, broke file sharing or something. And so, yes. I mean, it was... I mean, it's been a bad year, and it seems like this trend is continuing. I mean, but, okay, in Apple's defense, the news article did come out today that the new Sonos One is actually doing the same thing. And so there has something to do with this rubber and the silicone and the oils being secreted from the subwoofer.
Yes.
And we're just going to say because chemistry. So, I mean, but it happens.
Yeah, it's the lubricant that's put on the mold. So the silicone doesn't stick when they pull it out.
But, okay. But here's the thing, Chris. According to some news sources, this product has been, like, in development at Apple for, like, 2 or 3 years.
And I know what the problem is. I know everything in Apple is made of aluminum and glass. No one ever set it on a wood table.
Well, I'm getting there. Hold on. If this product is being in development for 2 to 3 years, they even said at, like, one of the conferences or whatever that Apple employees had it in their home. You can't tell me, out of all those people that had this in their home, they didn't have it sitting on a wooden surface.
I mean, that's crazy to think that might have been true.
And let's go one step further. The tables in Apple stores where you were going to see this product displayed are wooden tables.
Are they white ringing too?
I don't know. I haven't seen anything about that.
You know how hilarious that would be?
I mean, it's just... you can't tell me that... I mean... That somebody,
you know, wood's
didn't notice
a popular
this.
Material for tables.
I mean, and their solution, I mean, now granted, Steve was a bit of a jerk back in the iPhone 4 days when he said you're holding it wrong.
Oh, or, that was awesome.
Or essentially
I loved
along this.
That speech.
But it's like, but Apple's solution is put it on another surface. How can that be your solution? Look, and so I was telling my wife about this last night. And when I was kind of telling her to, I was kind of looking around at all of my surfaces that I have at the house. The only place I could put this HomePod, I can put it on the Formica-topped kitchen counter, or I can put it on top of the bathroom sink.
I think you should go for the bathroom sink.
That is the only two places that I could put it. Or it's going to go on the floor, or it's going to go on the bed, or it's going to go on a chair.
Wait, you have wood floor.
Well, I have laminate floor.
Oh, okay.
Well, no, but because there's something that kind of leaked out of my trash can that gave my laminate floor a white ring. So
there you go.
So
nobody crawled out of it.
Yeah. It's so, But yeah, nobody crawls out of it. But I mean, so I really have, if I was to get this speaker and, okay, let's take another step back. Saturday night, I heard this speaker at Best Buy. This speaker does sound incredible. I will say this. This speaker does sound amazing.
I watched someone tear one apart with a hatchet to look inside.
Because that just seems like something you would do with an Apple product. You tear
it
apart.
It does.
With a hatchet.
He bought three of them. And, but, dude, it's built really well.
The speaker technology that they're doing is amazing. Now, granted, and this is kind of funny. It's like we walked in the Best Buy, and I told my wife, like, I have to go to the restroom. And she's like, I do too. And so we both go to the restroom, which is basically, it's in the back of the store near the Apple section, but it's like across the store from the Apple section. And so we come out of the bathroom, and I'm kind of waiting on her. And then she comes out. And then I hear this music get cranked up, and I was like, I bet I know what that is. And it sounded so good. I'm across the store, and I hear this HomePod fire up, and it sounds so good. And it's playing, like, Stand By Me, some song like that, and it just sounded so good. And so I was like, I bet I know what that is. Come on, let's go look at it. She's like, what is this? I think it's that HomePod. And so we go over there, and there's an actual Apple guy demoing the HomePod. And I said, I just want to hear it. And so he plays it, and whatever. It's kind of soft nearby or whatever, and it sounded good. And then he cranked it up, and I was right there in front of it, and that's when it sounded like garbage. It's like it sounded better loud when you were farther away from it than when you were up close to it. And well, so, but, I mean, it's supposed to be a whole room speaker.
You're right, but I've watched a few things on it. I actually do keep up with the Apple stuff, believe it or not, and I was impressed that you could still speak to Siri even with the speaker going full volume.
And that, there's a guy that I follow on Twitter, Mike Hurley. He actually discovered that, like, when you talk to Siri and she starts, like, talking back to you, even though she can't do anything for you, because apparently that's Apple's thing with Siri on the HomePod. She can't do anything for you. She can just, I guess, tell you the weather. But it's almost like if you're in a nightclub and you go to, a back room or the restroom and the music kind of sounds like it's kind of muffled or in the background or whatever, the HomePod will actually do that.
That's cool. When
Siri's talking to you. And so it's like, it's just kind of a unique, it's just one of those little touches. And that's why people like Apple so much. It's because of those little touches that they do. I mean, just the fact that they care about little things like that, and that's why everybody's so passionate about Apple, and that's why everybody gets so critical when their devices start leaving white rings on their furniture.
Well, I mean, it's because maybe it's a forest for the trees kind of problem where they're so attention to detail they forgot the big thing.
And I wonder about that. I mean, and now we get another Indian character bug that's crashing not only iMessage but some other apps. I mean, what about all the people that are Indian that speak, I guess it's Punjabi, I think is what it is.
There's actually about 400 languages in India.
Well, I mean, well, whichever language this is, the ones that actually speak that language, and they're sending those characters back and forth on a daily basis. What's happening to their iPhones?
And you know, and this it just baffles me because Unicode has been around for a long time now.
Yes.
This is not new.
But it seems to me that it's almost like they've got their priorities mixed up in some ways. It's like we're more concerned about making cat faces mimic your face with this Animoji stuff.
That's more fun. Let's go ahead and be honest.
Yes. It's like I'm a 12-year-old deep inside. Inside I'm a 12-year-old, and so that's why Animoji appeals to me. I mean, I think it's dumb. I mean, and some people like it. I mean, it's okay.
Whatever.
If you like it, that's fine.
It's
cute. It's fun to do every once in a while. It's maybe something I would send back and forth with my wife, but I'm not going to send you an Animoji. No offense.
Oh, come on.
Just like if you had an Apple Watch, I wouldn't send you my heartbeat. I mean,
I don't need to be that close to you.
I mean, it's those little things that Apple are doing like that just kind of make no sense. It's almost like their focus is just in the wrong place. And I guess that's just really my complaint. It's like I want Apple to I almost want them to go back to somebody drawing the four quadrants on the board, and it's like you have consumer and you have professional and you have a laptop and you have a desktop, and you go back to the basics, and you do the basics. I mean, and that's the big rumor from Mark Gurman from Bloomberg right now, is that with iOS 12, don't get your hopes up for any big features. iOS 12 is supposed to be the quote-unquote snow leopard fix that they
keep
saying.
And if they do, it'll be great because snow leopard was my absolute favorite release of theirs.
But I think what everybody is deducting from this rumor that Mark Gurman, and apparently Mark Gurman is the guy that knows everything, between him and this guy named Minchi Kuo, I think he has like connections to the supply chain over in China. But it's like
sounds like he does.
But Mark Gurman seems to get like he's got the hookup, and it sounds like everybody's thinking that that Apple's going to kind of turn into a TikTok release, where it's going to be like new features are going to come maybe every 2 years as opposed to every year. And I think that would be, and I would be fine with that. I would be completely fine if I got iOS 11 this year, and then I got iOS 11.5 next year, and then wait another year and I get 12. That way. That you don't have developers rushing to get things done in order to meet these deadlines to get these iOS out.
I got a solution.
What's that?
Yeah, the Windows Insider program.
Well, I mean, they have that. They have public betas. They have that.
Well, then keep it in beta till it works.
Yeah. So I just don't get it. Yeah, I just don't know. And I would be fine with that. It's like move to an every 2 year for major updates, and so that these developers have the time to get the features right. And so that they don't announce a feature that I am super excited about and that I don't get and I'm still waiting for. I am still waiting for messages in the cloud.
And you know, I really do think they do need to have a 2 year cycle, because 1 year a new OS every year,
that's bad.
That's insanity.
Well, what is Microsoft doing it? They're doing it every 6 months.
Well, but it's the same OS. They're just adding features that they said were going to be there day one. We're not going there, but
everybody has troubles.
I know, but developers can't keep up with that kind of demand. They already don't sleep. I mean, you got to give them time to make sure their products are mature to use the new API that you just released before you go and change it in the next release.
Yeah, and here's how I'm going to bring this whole Apple conversation, this rant that I've been on, back to education. Here's how I'm going to bring it all back. If they move iOS to a 2 year cycle, that is going to be less headaches of me getting all of my iPads up to date. Because and it was like for 2 months, it was like every week or 2 weeks, I've got some iPads that still hadn't finished getting 11.2 out yet. I mean, I just can't keep up with the releases that they keep pushing up or pushing out. It's almost like I know they won't do it, but I kind of want them to. If they would like kind of do like Microsoft has breaking up Windows, it's like you have home, you have education, you have professional, you have workstation. Each one of them has different features. And Linux has like Ubuntu, and then have Ubuntu LTS.
I would like the Ubuntu model better, where they have the bleeding edge one that's only supported so long, but then they have the LTS that's supported for 4 years.
Yeah, and then I can push out like the LTS version of iOS to all of my iPads that. Well, it'll get updates, but it won't get updates as fast as everything else. It only gets those major
security
features. It
gets security patches and those kind of things, and feature updates just aren't there.
Yeah, and so because I don't need an emoji on my iPads. Not that it's on the iPad
now. You probably just have to disable it anyway.
Yeah, and so it's like
the awful things the kids would do with animals.
Oh, dude, let me tell you. the awful thing. I mean, I got this one iPad. I had to work on it from this one classroom, and it's... I don't know why. I think I did it by accident, but I hit the Photos app, and it's like, that was a mistake. Because
like ripping
apparently
your eyeballs out.
Well, I mean, this kid apparently took pictures of the teacher, like, in a not-so-flattering position. And so, I was like, what are these kids doing? And so, it's like, I can't disable the camera because some of these apps that they use, they need to take pictures with. And so, it's like, how can I police this? It's like, I don't know, it's a headache. It's like mobile devices, they have their good things, and then they have their bad things that just make you want to just go bundle all of them up, put them in a big box, and put them in the big blue magical storage box outside.
That's my favorite container in the whole school.
You fill it up, and then the next day you can go fill it up again. It's magic. I love it. But it's almost like you just want, like you said, you just want to rip your eyeballs out and you just want to rip out all these devices and you just want to give everybody like Etch-a-Sketches or Big Chief tablets and just call it a day.
You know, when I worked at the service center, this was actually completely accident. It was like my first month there. And my neighbor actually works there too. She still works there. But her first week there, she broke her computer and we had to wait on a part. And as a joke, I went and got her a Big Chief tablet and a pencil. Little did I know, that part was on back order. And she had a Big Chief tablet and a pencil for a whole month as her device.
And she was probably fine with it.
It kind of became an inside joke with us after that. But
threatened plenty of people with an Etch-A-Sketch. I mean, it's just like, look, if you break this again, I'm bringing you an Etch-A-Sketch.
I think that's one of the cruelest toys ever made.
They're horrible. It's like, this is weird.
I can't do anything on it. I can draw a square around the outside, but after that, that's it.
I haven't even seen one of those in a year. Or maybe some of those Magna Doodles. And we get them Magna Doodles and Etch-A-Sketches.
I love those.
And then we'll get them a Mr. Bucket. I told a kid, it's like, hey, do you remember Mr. Bucket? And they're like, Mr. Bucket?
I don't even know what Mr. Bucket is.
Mr. Bucket, you know Mr. Bucket. Buckets of fun. It's Mr. Bucket.
I know Mr. Potato Head.
Well, no, Mr. Bucket, he would like spit out this stuff and like you would have to like hurry up and put it all back in before you spit it out again. And I actually saw one at Walmart. I thought about buying it because it's like, it's Mr. Bucket.
I've never seen Mr. Bucket. I'm going to have to go look that up.
Mr. Bucket is great. It's like that and Teddy Rubskin. All those good toys that are making comebacks, actually. Except the new Teddy Rubskin's kind of creepy.
Oh, it's the eyes. Yeah. Man, the eyes aren't natural.
So you mentioned earlier that before my, I guess, half an hour rant on Apple, what did Samsung do today?
Samsung's being Samsung. And, you know, we always have the joke, well, if you want a phone that never updates, just get an Android.
Yeah, I know. Wouldn't that solve my problem? I should have just got all Android tablets.
You don't have to worry about updates. But they do get security updates every month now. Good Lord, not every week. That would be a nightmare on a phone.
That would be iOS.
And then it would just brick every other week on Android because, we didn't test it. But, Samsung, they've had this beta program out for Android 8 Oreo, and they just canceled it. They said, nah, we're good. We're not going to roll out 8 yet. We're going to start over. We got some bugs. Well, isn't that the point of the program?
Yeah, it's like...
Can the whole thing and start over.
That's why you have beta testers in order to find these bugs. I mean,
they were supposed to release it before the end of last year.
I don't know,
And they canceled and started over.
Maybe they should cancel the HomePod and start over.
I mean, it's just one of those, what are we thinking at this point? Is this really the right solution just to... can all the work because you got a reboot bug? Maybe you should figure out why it's rebooting.
Yeah, I mean, and so that's kind of like, well, if it reboots on its own, they might need to throttle the CPU down. So,
well, they probably aren't getting enough power because they're afraid the battery's going to blow up.
Yeah, this is probably it's like your own personal hand warmers right here. But you know, that's just our point. It's like I griped about Apple today, but you know, we could have one of these 45-minute conversations and we could gripe about Google. We could spend 4 hours griping or more griping about Facebook, and don't even get me started on Twitter.
We could gripe about Microsoft all week.
So it's like it's almost like a growing trend. Maybe it's just tech people are just losing their mind. I don't know. Maybe it's time for some new people to come in. But heaven help us, it's all these millennials that are getting out of these expensive colleges.
No. And that's the problem. We need to get rid of the new people and bring the graybeards back. It's like, they wrote something, and it worked, and it never had to be patched.
Yeah. It's
Now, screw security, because they didn't care about it then. But
I mean, it even goes to – I remember a few years back, you told me, it's like, hey – Linux, I mean, you can update Linux and you don't have to reboot. I mean, even nowadays, I'm having to reboot Linux all the time because of updates. Yeah. I mean, what happened to that idea?
They got greedy on the K-Splice and decided, you know what, we're going to make this a paid support feature where you have to pay us to update your kernel while it's running.
Yeah, and so it's like, I mean, it's these tech people, I don't know. Something's got to be done about it.
Well,
I mean,
let's just hope that when the autonomous vehicles come out, there's a little more quality of testing.
Oh, no kidding, because that is the last thing we need is autonomous vehicles leaving white rings in people's driveways.
It'd be like peeling out in a circle.
Yeah, donuts. They're leaving Hey, this autonomous vehicle's leaving donuts in my yard.
Did you try rebooting it?
You're not parking it in the right place.
Oh, goodness. You know you're going to have to post that image of the HomePod sock you sent me.
Oh, yeah. That was so funny. It was like that fake Johnny Ive account on Twitter. He said, I solved the HomePod problem. It's like the iPod sock, but they got it stretched
out around
the HomePod.
You know what's funny? You joke about that, but that's going to happen.
Well, I don't think it's going to be a sock, but I've already seen one today. I've already seen like a $20 leather coaster. That you sit your HomePod on.
Why don't you just get a coaster you already have and just set it on top of there?
That's been the joke online between tech journalists. It's like, hey, this is a $1 million project now, or $1 million product now. It's like, hey,
the HomePod needs something to sit on. So let's make some pretty doilies or coasters for this HomePod to sit on. And then somebody put it's like, hey, every HomePod did come with a coaster. It's the Apple sticker that's in the box with it.
Touche.
But and so it's like, so we're going to have companies like 12 South. They're not only going to make Mac smelling candles, but they're going to make doilies for your HomePod. So
that's it.
Maybe we should like patent that real quick. Send that to the patent office. Hey, we're making larger coasters for the HomePod, and that could be our $1 million idea. But
is there going to be like the made for HomePod certification you got to get?
This coaster is not compatible with your HomePod.
Yes, it will. It just set it upside down on top of it.
Apparently, my iCloud calendar is not compatible with Siri on the HomePod. So,
I mean, dude, I could totally see this happening at IKEA, compatible with HomePod on their furniture.
we use a special lacquered finish that will not white ring whenever you stick a smart speaker on it.
Oh, I love it.
All you got to do is just change the bottom of the HomePod. I mean, come on. Just put
and apparently, you can pull
there.
It. You can pull it off without having to hit it with a hatchet.
Yeah, I mean, it's just crazy. And then okay, and so we'll kind of wrap this up. I'll talk about Siri here. I'm making jokes that like Siri is pretty much useless on the HomePod, and I think Siri being useless on the HomePod is just about the same reason Siri is useless everywhere else. It's because, and this goes back to what I was saying, that Apple is that one company that cares about your privacy and the consumer, is because that everything done on Siri is pretty much done device level. I mean, some stuff is sent to the cloud, but they use this new differential privacy where they take like a little bit of you and a little bit of me, and they mix it all together, and then you can't really tell where it's coming from. And so they use this differential privacy for anything that's got to be done in the cloud. But that is the reason why Siri is so, it's not as good as the other lady in the can, Alexa. Apologize if anybody's echo went off, and shame on you for having an echo in your house. You don't want that thing listening to you every time you talk.
Hey, Alexa.
But because nothing's in the cloud, I mean, Siri is kind of useless. I mean,
you know, though.
But, you know, and not to interrupt you, but it's like if you know that your services are set up that way, that you would do things like to your local device and using Siri as a smart speaker that you know that it could excel at, like setting multiple timers. My iPhone cannot even set multiple timers.
You can't set two timers?
Well, I mean, it's like for a lot of, one of the big uses that people use for Echoes is they set a timers while they're cooking.
Oh,
it's
yeah,
like
it's wonderful.
Set a timer for the eggs, set a timer for the rice, set a timer for the lasagna cooking in the oven or whatever, because you know the one on your stove can only do one at a time. And so now you have a device that can do multiple timers for when you're cooking multiple things at the same time. I mean, that's something kind of simple. It's like,
yeah, it's pretty basic.
And if you know that your device is not going to be able to do as much as these other competitors are, then you would maybe like ship it with those kinds of features.
Yeah, I mean, it being local, I mean, it seems like there's kind of some niche things that you can do, because if you are local, well, you better pay attention to what's around you.
But again, who's going to buy a $350 kitchen timer? I mean,
well, I don't know. Some people would, but.
But the good thing is, and this is, except for the white ring, the good thing about the HomePod is everything that's wrong with it is software.
They Minus won't, the ring, you're right.
They won't have to release a whole new HomePod to be able to fix the problems with Siri or the smart features or anything like that. That can all be done in software.
You know, I think you just found the root cause of why the problems exist.
The software?
Well, no. They don't have to fix it before they ship it,
because it can all be in post, right? That's what we say in the podcast world. It's like we can screw up because we can fix it in post.
Yep,
fix it all in software. And
that's,
you know,
the problem.
And I don't know. My whole thing is, if you're going to announce that a device is going to have a feature, and the main thing that the HomePod is missing is multiple room audio and AirPlay 2. That is the one main feature. Like one of the big selling points of the HomePod that it was supposed to have is AirPlay 2, which AirPlay 1 is great, except for the 2 second late,
delay in everything that you do to it. It's like your AirPlay, something you hit pause, 2 seconds later will actually pause. It's just a limitation of AirPlay. But AirPlay 2 was supposed to take care of that and be a more direct connection. It was supposed to allow like the multiple audio sources where you can go from your phone and you say, hey, play the music on the HomePod and play it on the other HomePod in the other room, and you have multiple streams.
Wow, we got two HomePods in this house?
Yeah, well. And some people like wanted HomePods because the HomePod is, it's a mono speaker. And so you're not going to get really the lefts and the rights out of it. But that's all these smart speakers. And so a lot of people, they want two of them. And so that you can get the stereo effect, because some songs they have like, it's like, some songs you hear like the guitar, and then some songs you hear this. I don't know why people do that. I guess they just kind of do it because they like it. To me, I'm fine with the mono speaker.
They can. That's the only reason I can think of. But if they do ever release another one, they need to call it the Home Puck.
To make a little one?
Yeah, make a little one. Call it the Puck.
And, you know, I might be more inclined for something like that. But, you know, here's the thing. And this is kind of what it boils down to. The HomePod, it sounds great, but it's not for me. I don't really want a smart assistant. I don't want an assistant. Just leave off smart. I don't want an assistant like that in my house. I don't really know how much they're recording and how much it's being sent, or if it really is only listening to the keyword that is supposed to like wake it up. I'm not to the point where I can trust that yet. I mean, and that goes to the point. It's like, somebody told me she can literally have a conversation about something with someone, a conversation like in real life, IRL, a conversation, not even like over instant message or over email or anything like that. And then she is seeing ads for whatever they talked about on Facebook. To me, something's up like that, and I'm not full trustworthy about it yet.
And it happens to me all the time. I talk about a lot of off the wall topics. Go figure. And I can type the first two letters of what I was just talking about in the Google ping, the Google super bar or whatever they want to call it, and exactly what I was talking about will come up. And it's like, you cannot tell me that those two letters would equal that without prior knowledge.
Something is listening, or it's mining that data from somewhere. See, there's our cryptocurrency talk right there. Mining
for
data.
I was just about to say, can I profit from this mining any?
Well, no, because Google is. Dang it. But, I mean, and so that's the reason why I don't really want a smart speaker a digital assistant in my house. That may change if they get more useful, and I want Siri to succeed. But it has made me want a speaker in my house, because I was cooking, because it was Valentine's Day yesterday, and the Hallmark greeting card company decided that I should do something nice for my wife. And so I decided to go home and cook supper, and so I had music playing, and all I had was my iPhone there. So it did kind of spark this, like, you know, it would be nice to be able to have some kind of speaker to play some music. But that's it. I mean, that's sort of our show this week. I mean, just wanted to rant about Apple and the HomePod White Ring. Couple of things, though, before we wrap up. We moved our podcast hosting to Simplecast. We are going to publish this episode on the Simplecast platform. I think I have done everything in the back end as far as the RSS feeds or whatever connecting to Apple. We use a third-party service called FeedBurner that I made a joke about earlier. And so I changed the FeedBurner original feed, and everything else sees the FeedBurner out, so FeedBurner address. So everything should be the same. We're going to drop this episode in the Simplecast system, and we're going to make sure that everything populates okay. If I see that it's a problem, I'll drop it in the old system real quick, and so that you can get this up. Well, I mean, if you're hearing this right now, you'll know that you got it some way.
One of these two things have happened.
Yeah. So, but I am going to change the web address over to the Simplecast web address eventually. But right now, I don't want to mess with it, because I want to make sure that the RSS works fine. And so if you go to the webpage looking for this episode or some show notes, you won't find it. You need to go to educatingtech.simplecast.fm. That link will be in the show notes that you can – well, I mean, if you're going to the link for the show notes, it kind of doesn't do you any good. But if you're listening on an app or whatever, that you should be able to see the show notes. And so if you want to see, like, past episodes or getting links to get in touch with us, you can click on that link temporarily to get this episode and all the past episodes. And so we're going to be moving to the Simplecast feature to the system from now on, and I think it's just going to work out better and do some better stuff for us, and I don't have to manage a whole Linux server just to post a podcast. So that'll be kind of less work for me. But if you want to reach out to us, I'm at Twist of Matt on Twitter. Chris is at Feeks. You can reach the show note, the show account at Educating Tech. Send us an email at educating tech. I'm going to get this right one day. Send us an email at educatingtech@gmail.com. If you have any feedback or anything you want to talk about as far as Apple stuff goes, we'll try to get back to education stuff next week. So that's it, and we'll see you next week. See you later, Chris.
See you later, Matt.